Hey, this is Lucas Ryder, executive producer and co-writer of episode 502, Grace and Blaze. You're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
If empathy and rapport is the goal, to get one to tell something that they don't want to tell, then we'll try to do that with our next chat with John. Welcome to the award-winning Blacklist Exposed. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson, and I still want to know who's in the box, or suitcase, as it were. Thanks for joining us once again as we discuss number 37 on the Blacklist, Grace and Blaze, written by Lucas Ryder and John Bokenkamp, and was directed by Don Thorne. Show notes and other info and intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com.
We've only been doing it like 92 times, and you mess up now?
It happens, man. What do you want me to write me up?
We got 20 more of these to do this year.
Got the award. I'm good. Don't have to try anymore.
Is that what it is?
I'm done reading.
There you go.
I'm going to wing this whole thing. From now on, I'm sans pants. Let's go.
All right. Well, we asked you last week to interpret how you think Tom got into that precarious position, besides him being clairvoyant, as Aaron likes to put it. So what did we get for answers from the wonderful Blacklist community this week?
Roseanne, Jerry, I almost said Rosanna, Dana, Dana. Nobody would get that, but you, Troy. He tripped over Agnes's doll.
That's funny.
And then he had a flash of the future. I want to know, did Tom die? And is this not the real Tom from Roxy Fillinger? I assume it's the real Tom, unlike what Troy thinks or thought or randomly put together. I don't know. Yeah, I think it's real Tom. You?
Well, Roxy continues and says, I took the Tom scene as a flashback, not a flash forward. So there you go. I'm not the only crazy idiot out there.
Hey, nobody said idiot. All right? Don't be name calling.
You called me an idiot off air.
Well, no, I was. That's a generalization. I was just more like, that's your name at this point. I don't even know. Troy, do you spell it with a
Troy
T?
Idiot
I don't know.
Heimerts.
I spell
it with a T. That's right.
Okay, Monica says, persons or persons unknown, KGB, CIA, discovered the existence of the bones and sought to silence Tom, who possessed them.
Interesting.
I like that. Yeah, okay.
We talked about all the players on the map. There's still more organizations out there, so let's start moving some of that. The whole 2017 war. Let's get back to some of those storylines. Maybe this is it.
Or the cabal. Pretty sure is there a cabal still? I don't know. We haven't heard about them.
Doesn't Red like own part of them or in charge of them?
We're going to talk about that. That's in my notes, pal. You hold tight.
Okay, we'll hold tight.
Barbara, 6602, and a bunch of other numbers. Someone from Red's past found out Liz was his daughter via Cooper and went to the apartment for Liz, and Tom was there. Ooh. Oh, interesting.
Maybe this new FBI director that's being so pushy.
I like it. And Nancy, VH7, Red and Dembe are saving Tom and Agnes from, well, I don't know that yet. Well, Nancy, come on. All right? You got to give me some ideas. What do you think? What are you thinking? But she goes on to say, Red won't take Agnes's father from her.
True. It's a Hobson's choice.
You think so? I'm not convinced of that. All right. And at right tomorrow, I think it's Tom imagining the consequences of giving Liz that suitcase. He knows what it'll cost Red. Now, I do think that's definitely a possibility.
It's not a flash forward at all. It's just a conjuring.
Flash sideways.
Turn inside out.
Yep. Something like that. I could see that as an option. Absolutely.
There you go. Marta said, I think Tom ends up finding out the ID of the bones, but doesn't understand the dangerous significance of that info. He isn't careful enough with the info, which causes Liz and Agnes and Red to be in the deepest peril they've ever been from old enemies of Katarina. Tom may not survive this at the hands of Red. That last shot of Tom in the flash looks like a possible last breath. Krista said, possibly his backstory coming to light and Solomon coming after Agnes like he did Dembe's granddaughter and Red walks in. Be cool to see Solomon come back.
So basically the theory here is that Marta thinks that's Tom's a dead man. And Krista, it sounds like, thinks that the gun is actually pointed at somebody else.
Correct.
Which it could very well. I mean, you know they do that in TV, right? It appears like that.
Camera angles are tricky like that.
Yeah,
it takes 70 of them to do a shower scene, apparently.
wait, what?
Psycho, right? It was like 70 camera
78.
Shots.
Yeah, 78. Yeah.
Barbara said, I believe that it's a flash forward. Tom may have actually been fighting someone who was also on the ground after Red came in. Tom looks pretty beaten up, though. I think Red shot whoever was in the room with Tom. It could have been someone trying to hurt Agnes. I don't know why they'd be hurting Agnes because she's MIA for some reason.
She's in witness protection at this point. Is DCFS involved yet?
Well, they do have a nanny. They do have a nanny, so.
Where's the nanny?
That's what I want to know.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining. Less baby time. I'm okay with that. More action. Let's get into it. And apparently this week, there's a lot of sexy, sexy action. But I just want to know where the baby. Can we get like a snapshot of her maybe from a Skype window or something? I don't know.
Hey, great parents, right? The baby sleeps whenever they need it to. So that's a good thing.
You're doing it right. That's how I wish I could have done that.
Ben continued and said, my two thoughts are, A, it's a scenario that plays in Tom's head because he knows Red and he tries to figure out how it will actually end for him. Or B, it teases us as some kind of finale season or maybe even mid-season.
All right. That's great thoughts, man. Oh, wait. There's more.
I left these specifically for you.
Five seasons in, there are those that are still on the ban Tom bandwagon. Kathleen Brenner, it's just a tease. We couldn't be so lucky as to be rid of Tom. Kiss my freckle. They great Twitter name. They need to stop teasing and kill him off already. Damn.
There's still people that just hate Tom. He's the most polarizing character on television, I swear. Some people love really, him, some people hate him.
Some people of TV, that's a big statement, sir.
It seems like it.
That's a big statement. I don't know, man. Game of Thrones has got a few over Tom, I would think.
Yeah, as evil as some of those people are, I've never actually wished them ill harm. These people are like, kill Tom now.
Maybe that means he's doing his job great. All right, so next week, here is the profiling question for next week. Who is Oleander? Oleander, who is that? Who is the infamous Oleander, the one word the dead guy got out?
Right.
Before he croaked. All right.
All right, let's get on with the show before the old lady comes back with her hamster.
Number 37 on the blacklist is Grayson Blaze. And before we get into this episode, we need to talk about the numbering.
Yes, we do.
Last week, number 30 was this money man. And this week, number 37 is Thomas Crown, basically. So
let me clarify here. Thomas Crown is definitely more skillful, more crafty than a guy who does logistics for a carnival company. So it almost seems like these numbers should be reversed, let alone even be this high on the list.
So are we sure we know what the hell the numbers are for? Because we got a lot of messages and emails and stuff about why was Smokey Putnam number 30? Because it didn't seem like he should be that high up the list. And I'm really not in disagreement. I guess I'm confused. But he did need him. Maybe I'm telling you, maybe it's just the value of necessity to Red at that moment. Is that where he fits on the list? Do you have another theory based opposite or any different than you've had in the years past?
Well, number 30 is what the market is for Milwaukee, and I know Milwaukee has some interesting characters, so maybe it was just tied that way.
What?
I could pick on Milwaukee because I'm from Milwaukee, but
okay, I'm asking a legitimate question. This is hard news.
That's the best I can come up with as to what these numbers actually mean. All I know is that there's like 90 some that are still left that we haven't actually done yet, so the show could go on forever.
I'm picturing a dartboard, and number 30 it is. That's what I'm picturing. That's what I'm about. Triple tens this week, Smokey Putnam. Yeah? No? Triple think? Tens. That's where I'm going with.
Sure.
I don't know, but you know what? It's all going to make sense in the end, but right now I'm having a lot of fun with it. I felt like these guys didn't deserve to be so high, and this guy, I mean, really, he was just Thomas Crown, and kind of a low-rent Thomas Crown. I mean, he's no Steve McQueen or Pierce Brosnan. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, he's only worth a penny at the end of the day.
Ooh.
That should make him like, you know, like 200 or something.
Yeah, and you found a cool fact about the Napoleon necklace in this episode. Do you want to mention that?
Yeah, it actually is a real thing. So exactly as Grayson explained it in the episode, in 1810, Napoleon divorces the Empress Josephine, and she proved incapable of producing an heir. So he remarried 2 months later to the Archduchess Marie Louise of Austria.
I've heard it three ways.
And within a year, Marie Louise bore a son. So to celebrate, Napoleon commissioned the Napoleon diamond necklace from a Parisian jewelry firm at the cost of about 376,000 French francs.
What is that in like US dollars? Like $8?
Yeah, something like that.
Well, okay. I'm not good with my currency.
Definitely a good dozen dollars. So that way you can at least get a meal out of it.
Well, that's a fun fact, and I appreciate you finding that, because I did not find it. So moving on to the rest of the story, when Red is here's the crux of the episode. And once again, if you've never listened before, we break down the basic crux of the episode, and then we move on to characters, and we kind of go through the story as the characters live the events. So basically, Red is apparently still broke, and he's working on growing that operation back.
Or is he?
Yeah, that's a good question. Do you think he's legitimately broke, or do you think this is part of a ruse?
At this point, I think he's just doing it to have fun. He's literally at the point where, man, it's just been like really stressful lately. I just want to let loose for a little bit. So I'm going to go on this I'm broke angle and make people think that. But really, it's all just part of my master plan.
I kind of don't think he's broke either. And maybe that's not, I mean, he's obviously he looks like he's broke. He's enjoying living off the government dime. But I can't imagine a guy like Red wouldn't have a few million stashed away somewhere. Even I realize that Kaplan got, what, $200 million or something. But it sure seemed like Red always had a lot more than that. So, I don't know. I just feel like this is part of a play.
I think so, too. I'm convinced of it, because it's not like he's working. He's still getting money to be able to pay for the wine at the social hour. So, yeah, he definitely has some cash somewhere. There's a bigger game at play. Maybe it's getting funneled through the cabal, since he apparently is part owner in that.
Yeah, I mean, who is paying for the peppers and onions that Dembe is using to saute things? Somebody's got to pay for that. That ain't free. All right, so to do this, to get his operation back and keep Harold happy, he needs to rope in Grayson Blaze, who's an elusive thief. So first, here's the plan. First, they break into an auction to get Grayson's attention, and then Red quickly plans a party in Lake Como, Italy, that he has no idea, apparently, how to pull off. He then convinces the FBI to turn into the CIA as they hop over to Paris to try to steal a Rembrandt painting. Blech, say that three times real fast. Which they cannot steal, so instead, Red is forced to have one created. First thing I want to ask you, this is episode 2. It's a little lighter of season 5. Again, the theme and the tone are very light. It's almost whimsical in a way, I would say. And it actually felt like they were going for that Thomas Crown feel, where it was very light on your feet and you're seeing Red kind of just dance in and out of scenes. How do you like this mood, this tone they're doing this season?
And I mean, it opens up with such a great song, too, as he's stealing the necklace. I felt very Thomas Crown Affair, very Ocean's 11 kind of feel to it. And the best part about the episode, I think, was the whole Tier 3 situation when they break into Grayson's manor. And then if everybody start running around and you get the kind of guitar music in the background, and Liz is like, oh my gosh, there's a necklace here. I mean, all of that said, I think this was a very fun episode. I'm still trying to figure out if this was just, we have to fill 40 minutes, because the real meat of the episode is the last 4 minutes with Tom. Because I don't know how this fits into anything.
Not yet, anyway. Not yet. I love this, man. I mean, this really felt more... It felt more, not so much, I don't want to say season one, because season one was pretty dark in terms of the blacklisters. But it feels more, okay, it feels more
definitely
season
3A.
One in terms of, no, it feels more season one in terms of procedural, because it does feel like it kind of wraps up by the end, these two episodes. But it just feels lighter. Actually, I don't think this tone has been really utilized in any of the seasons thus far. So it's a very new thing for this show. It's almost like a burn notice kind of thing. And I really like it. I'm really enjoying it. I love seeing Keen. It's having a blast. And she's having fun. She's like she's never had on the show before. And I love that. Her laugh is just, I mean, it's just charming. And I just love all that. I love the scene with her and Tom. I just love seeing Keen play like these last two episodes and how Megan's been playing with it and having a ball. And her and Spader seem like they're having a ball. It just seems like a lot of fun. Now, I realize Blacklist has never really been fun, but these last two episodes, I mean, it's fun to watch, but I don't know if I would ever call it a fun show, like a caper. These two feel like capers, and I'm really digging it.
I love caper shows. Give me caper shows any day of the week.
Oh, man, like Leverage.
Yep.
It's got a little Leverage feel to it, which is a good thing. It's a good thing to me. I like it. Okay, so all of this was in turn to get Grayson picked up. Let me sure I got this right. Grayson picked up so Red could grab his flash drive to turn over to Harold. And what other benefit did Red get on this one?
Yeah, so the painting was fake. So that way they go, Grayson gets released so the FBI can pick up Grayson. And then all he comes away with is the Lincoln penny.
Which has, and it's going to be important, I think, at some point.
But it just lost like $300 million of value because Liz took it out of its protective sleeve and touched all over it.
Is it worth $300 million?
I have no idea what it's worth, but it's worth more than you should be not touching it. You should leave it inside the protective casing.
No, I'd be flipping it, trying to decide what number the blacklist is going to be next week. Turns out it's 43 heads. Sorry, guys.
That's funny.
Yeah. That's very much what I, by the end of it. Okay. I have a legitimate question. He wanted the guys to get the real Rembrandt painting, right?
Right.
That seemed to be the plan. And then she didn't have it. And he actually looked befuddled. Like, I can't believe she sold it. She promised she would sell. And then he commissioned Dale, right? Dale's his name.
Correct.
Commissioned Dale to work up a forgery. Okay.
Well, here.
So if hang on, let me finish my thought.
Go ahead.
Because I lose it very quickly. So if they had actually stolen the original, then he would have the original. Grayson would have the original. He'd be busted by the Italian police, and he would be locked up because they'd have cause. And therefore, Harold would never get him. So that doesn't seem like a great plan in the scheme of things.
Unless you're Raymond Reddington, and you know exactly where the Storm on the Sea of Galilee painting is. So for all of the Blacklist detectives out there, you might remember this fun fact. One episode 6, I believe it was, season 1, Gina Xenotacos. In that episode, Red actually has the Storm of the Sea of Galilee painting, and he's going to give it away as a wedding gift to Hakim and one of his many wives. So the question becomes, was this lady that they met up with one of Hakim's many wives? I don't think so, because she seemed more proper, put together, very English, if you will. So I think that Red knew all along that the painting was with Hakim and went to this lady as a complete ruse.
Mm. What's to be gained from that, though? Like, so just to put them off on a goose chase, whatever, I don't know, goose case, that's beer, right?
That probably works, too.
Put them off on a goose chase so that he and Liz would have time to get this building, or what?
I think so. I think this was all a... He was going to go to his buddy Dale no matter what, but he had to make it look like he's like, oh, man, it's not there? Well, gee whiz, what am I going to do now? Oh, I know. I'll just call Dale.
Okay.
So he literally ropes everybody along in the episode. It's very much like last week where he just kind of roped everybody along, and then you're kind of like, oh, that was really the plan? So I think he knows exactly where the Storm of the Sea of Galilee is. It's with Hakim in his harem, and... it was never with this lady to begin with in the first place.
Okay.
Because we have precedent in season 1, episode 6.
All right. Now, either that was a brilliant plan, or Troy just covered everybody's ass with that find. So, whatever works. I mean, either way, it works.
It was a funny point, too, because in that season 1, episode 6 episode, they're talking of Hakim.
How do you remember that? Did you Google this? How did you find this?
No, I was watching it over the summer, so it stuck in the back of my mind. But in this conversation with Hakim's asking, like, what do the blues look like? And Newton Phillips is standing there, and he's like, well, they look blue. So the fact that he was talking about the blues and that they were, like, coming off the page almost as if they were wet, I thought that was kind of funny. It was a nice little touchback to season 1.
Did you go research to make sure it was the same painting?
It is the exact same painting.
Okay. All right. Season
1, episode 6, probably about the 5-minute mark, and then I think it shows up again at the 40-minute mark when Liz comes in and is like, you were the one that put Tom in my life and blah, 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 blah. So.
Spot on impression. Spot on.
I try.
All right. great job. All right. Also in this episode, there is a lot of Tom trying to decipher what's in the suitcase, including going back to Dr. Nick Corporal, Liz's ex, for help with the bones, which I thought that was kind of a fun callback. I didn't expect to be back to Nick, but we have wanted to make sure this dude ain't dead.
That's so right. That's we have confirmation. Nick is alive.
Nick's alive. Both Tom and Dembe end up trying to find Dennison, I believe was his name, the contact Kaplan set in place for Tom before he decided to poke his ass around. Guy ends up shot and leaves Tom with a dying word, Oleander. I just want to say, I thought he was dead, like just dead. But apparently he was alive long enough to get Oleander out.
So the question is, why was he beaten up in the first place when Tom got there? Did Dembe do a number over on him initially? Before he called Red and said, hey, Red, I found the guy.
No, there's no stove there. So, you know, that only works for the other guy.
Ah.
You know, cooking him a meal. He had the food handy. He had a nice kitchen area. I mean, it seemed like a good location. And this guy's very, very, listen, a very tight, kind of quaint apartment. You got to beat him up. You don't have time for that. You don't have time to cook him dinner.
But does Dembe pray ahead of time? Like, Allah, let my hands be controlled so I don't beat this guy into a pulp before Red gets here?
That was a good point. I did think about that when I watched him. Like, didn't Dembe just say he prefers to do it the other way? Why are we roughing him up? But you know what? I don't think he would be susceptible to food. Plus, he was cohort of Kaplan, who just destroyed their entire operation.
But it seemed like Red knew Dennison because he said, hey, Albert. He called him by his first name.
Yeah, he was part of Kaplan's operations. Of course he did.
So
that makes total sense.
So do you buy into the fact that Dembe beat him up before Red got there?
Yeah.
Before Tom got there, even?
Yeah, like I just said, it's not the same. Like the other guy, he didn't really do anything to anyone. This guy willfully, he was complicit in trying to thwart Red's operation. So I think he would rough him up, yes.
Okay. All right.
I mean, ultimately, he is the muscle, right?
He is the muscle.
All right. Well, let's move on to our characters, man. Before we talk about what the hell is Oleander.
Who is an Oleander? We'll talk about that, too, in a minute.
He didn't say who.
He said find him. That's a who.
Did he say find him?
He did.
All right.
So, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Because music's up first, and as the episode opens on Grayson stealing the Napoleon necklace, we hear a woo by Sophie Tucker featuring Betta Lem. Now that Liz and Tom are reunited, and it feels so good, wink, wink, we hear Afternoon Takeoff by Small Forward. Then as Samar graces the party with her presence while helping the others break in, That Gut Feeling from Tim Juke and the Jack Baker Trio plays, which also features Andrea Triana on that track. It's a lot of T's. Later on, as Wrestler and Dale show up with the painting, we hear Say I Wanna Know by Nick Waterhouse. And then as all hell breaks loose, since we're at Tier 3, people, everyone scrambles to Power, the Voodoo version by King Britt and Sister Gertrude Morgan. A lot of songs in this episode.
A lot of songs, a lot of music.
All great songs, too. I was listening to on the way home today. It was pretty good.
Did you? Were you getting a little on?
I was.
That's my impression of it. Way better than your Liz impression. That was my impression of a disco club.
There you go.
Except I'm old because I said disco. Let's just move on from that. All right. Grayson Blaze.
My disco club has Paul Anka playing, but that's different.
Oh, my God, man. That's some dignity. All right. He felt greatly like a red herring, I thought, most of the episode. Did you agree?
No, I mean, I think the character is cool. I think the character is an interesting guy. I think he's definitely a player in the world of the criminal empires as things progress. So, no, I don't think he was a red herring at all from the episode perspective. I still want to know what his purpose was and what did they actually get on the flash drive? Because I would think the flash drive would have been what Red was looking for in order to rebuild his empire. But maybe it was that the booklet of stuff he was going through and he like found a name or a person or something that he memorized before he said, throw it in the microwave and burn everything. But no, I think Grayson is a cool cat. I think that's someone that would have been great in the operation, to be quite honest. So I'm surprised he turned him in. Maybe he just wanted to take over.
I'm very surprised too. I mean, it is possible that he replaced the flash drive or took off the information he needed from that flash drive. I think that's a possibility, but it really felt, it's because he turns almost everything over except that penny, and we don't know what the use of that penny is. I feel like, to me, that I needed more information as to why is this guy important? Because I didn't get a good feel for why he was important by the end of the episode.
Is it us because it's like season 5 now that we're examining it this way? I mean, when we got the key from Pepper, we weren't like, what's the key for? Like, what's it going to open? Like, we weren't questioning it then.
Well, yeah, but a key opens something. What's a penny do? It flips.
It's literally there as bait so that they could get the whole penny for your thoughts line out.
Oh, dear Lord. That's possible. Yeah, it's possible. But a penny isn't really, it isn't getting me, it's not a key to a lockbox. It's not a combination. It's not Oleander. It's not something that gets me intrigued as to what could that be used for. To me, all I saw was, all right, it's probably worth some money, so maybe that'll get them some capital. That's all I got from it in that respect. I mean, I really love, don't get me wrong, I love this episode. I think it's a blast. But that doesn't mean I can't question some things. And the penny thing, maybe it'll obviously come into effect later. But as of today, as of right now, I'm confused as to its purpose. And if this episode had a purpose or if it was more like a one-off.
He really wanted a piece of gum from his gumball machine in his secret hideout that was off the grid next to his Ms. Pac-Man machine, and he ran out of pennies because he's broke. So he needed a penny to get a piece of gum.
That was a really long and bad joke. Okay. I feel sad for you, so we're going
to
move
on. At least it was in the show. At least I'm trying to reference something in the show to make it plausible.
Legitimate question. Do you have any idea what that penny could be used for?
I'm assuming it's a trading chip for something. Whether he can sell it on the black market to get some cash, whether he's got a person that has been looking for it and he's going to use it to woo them into the organization. It definitely seems like it's a piece on a puzzle board that we haven't seen the full puzzle of the top of the box yet.
I'm looking forward to seeing that play out.
Although the penny did disappear, so we don't know where the penny is.
Liz has it.
But she made it disappear. It was magic.
You're a dork. You know who else disappeared? Anna Cartwright.
Yeah.
She disappeared. The girlfriend. I liked her. I thought she was fun.
She would have been interesting to see as part of the team or a character that you would have for a longer period of time.
I kind of thought it was going to be a bait and switch. That's what I thought. I thought it was going to be she's the important target. And I was wrong.
I was waiting for that the entire episode myself.
All right. Well, moving on to Aram. He really had little to do this episode. Agreed?
Agree, but he's coming. I'm sure there's a big Aram episode. There's always one within that first 8 episodes.
Oh, yeah. You know, if he doesn't have much screen time now, he's out riding his bike, like getting in shape for some big action scene. That's what I'm guessing. Samar, on the other hand, she gets very little to do this week, except look stunning in a party dress and kick somebody's ass in a dress.
That's right.
It's tough to do in heels.
I also like the forceful Samar when she actually pulls the gun on the old lady.
I was like, what are you doing? What's going on?
If you don't tell us what we need to know, I'm going to kill you, my little pretty, and your little dog, too.
What? Were you surprised by that? Because I was very surprised by that.
It was a little different for Samar, I think. But you have to remember, she comes from a different way of life. She hasn't always been FBI in the past. So this doesn't seem like it's too far out in left field for her character. But at the same time, it was kind of like, whoa, we're getting down to business here. This is interesting.
Why would she think it was so important?
Well, she was just playing the game. She was playing the...
No, you say that. I don't know if I agree with that. She's been in the field for a couple years now. I've never seen her do that before, really. So there's really no precedent that I can think of off the top of my head. I'm sure there's somebody else who's like, oh, yeah, 44 minutes in of episode 19 or something. But I can't think of anything off the top of my head. So it feels to me like she felt this was very important, but I don't get as to why.
Well, because she's covering herself up. Remember, they're in a foreign country and they have no jurisdiction. So they have to basically act as if they were part of Red's criminal empire type of a character in order to be able to get in and get out without having, you know, police called or, you know, arrested, which would cause an international incident. So I think that's why she was playing the tough card because she could, because she knows she's not acting as a law enforcement agent in that regard by international rules.
See, that's an explanation I could buy. Still a stretch, but I like it. I like it. It works for me. Wrestler, Tom's plight puts wrestlers on the back burner as he functions pretty much as a U-Haul mover for most of the episode. He's just moving paintings around and loading up vans. That's kind of where he's at this week. Anything I missed from Wrestler?
No, actually, I called Wrestler to see if he could help me this weekend since I've got the big move coming up. So I'll see if he's available.
Yeah, that's great. So I'm sure we'll have more from him, which is I was kind of bummed about that. He had such a great arc last episode. And I know that's what some of the audience concern is with Tom when he's back on the show now, is that it takes away from other characters that we're finally getting a light shone on them. So do you feel that as an audience member yourself?
I think that when you have, and I guess I'm comparing this to other season premieres, and unfortunately the only thing I've had time to watch because of my move from this new television season is Grey's Anatomy. So they had a two.
What?
They had
it's like 17 years in. Or turn the. Find something else, man.
14 years and it was glorious. But they had a really interesting two-part episode to start the season. And so when you have that kind of first two episodes, I expect them to kind of go hand in hand because then it sets up what will be 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. But those first two kind of go together. So to have this big, I'm going to blackmail you story in episode one, you would assume that there'd be at least a blackmail situation in episode two, and then maybe you don't see him again until episode 5 or 6 or something. But yeah, I was kind of disappointed not to see at least something related to the blackmail situation in this episode.
Yeah, it was too. It was very interesting. I was really excited about Rustler's storyline. It seemed very, I know it'll be coming back up. I was just kind of surprised that it kind of went on the back burner so quick.
Right.
But there's only so many characters that they can write
there
prominent.
Only 44 plots. Minutes in an hour.
There's only 44 minutes in an hour. We have a new player that can whip up fake paintings in 22 hours. So why?
20 hours, he said it. I could get it done in 20.
Okay. So why didn't Red just start with this guy? Like, why didn't he already have it ready to go then, I guess?
That's the big question. Like, you have to buy into this whole concept that Red knew that Hakim had the painting and this lady was just a ruse. But then when you get to this situation, it sounds like he really thought the lady had the painting and therefore he was really in a bind. Because
That's what I keep saying.
I know. It's confusing. I believe you. I find it confusing. I don't know which side of the coin to believe.
Coin. I see what you did there.
I would assume that you'd have this guy on speed dial say, hey, start making a Rembrandt because I know Rembrandts are hard. I'm going to come find you. But then you got to play along or something. But it seemed like he truly walked in and was like, oh, no. You know, I need it in 24 hours. And he's like, I can do it in 20. Okay,
that's
sure.
My point, because the whole time it seemed like Red was surprised. I mean, you made your whole big, long speech about the first episode or the first season or whatever. That's great. And it sounds legit to me.
But he seems legitimately shocked.
Yes, he does. He doesn't seem like he knows this fact at all. So to me, it really feels like this plan just didn't go according to plan, which means the end game wouldn't make any sense. That's where I get confused. As much as I like this episode, this feels like one of those little loopholes to me.
Or it's one of those things where it was like, oh yeah, we brought that up at one point in time and we kind of forgot about it. So we had to kind of write around it.
It's possible.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what the answer is. I just know that there's a missing cog in this wheel, and that painting is right at the middle of it.
Now, Red said, though, that he was pissed off that she got rid of it, and that he wanted to, because she agreed that he would broker the sale. So maybe when Hakim, with his many wives, was done with the Storm of the Sea of Galilee painting, maybe Red did broker a sale to go from Hakim to this lady. So that is possible, that it did move hands in between season 1 and season 5. In which case, then Red would be shocked that the lady doesn't have it because the lady reneged on the deal by not letting him sell it again.
Mm. All right.
I'm just helping the writers out explain it away.
Whatever works for you, man. Whatever works for you.
Because it is confusing.
It's confusing. I mean, it's not something I really... Ultimately, this is capers. There's always a hole in capers, it really feels like. There's always some thread that doesn't necessarily connect right. And they probably connected it, and we just right over our head. Very possible. And I'm sure the listeners will be more than happy to point that out. You guys always do. So have at it. Let us know where we missed something. That would be great. Let's move on to Cooper, man. He's getting fired up about Red breaking protocol and making him fund this nonsense. Do you think he's ever going to put his foot down?
I think he kind of did put his foot down with Red a little bit. I mean, he just started going off on him. He's like, I'm not upset. Let me tell you a few things that's going on, but I'm not set. Red's like, I think you're upset. Or I could have sworn you were upset.
But then Red threw him the bone and all was well because of the painting thing didn't work out.
But at the same time, that's exactly what Cooper wanted. Like, Cooper walked in and said, do you have an office? Well, I gave you a blacklister. Why do we need an office? So he is doing the things that Cooper is expecting of him. So maybe Cooper should back off a little bit.
No.
Now, a giant million-dollar bill of catering and wine and Lake Como is a different story. That we have to have a conversation about.
That's hard to explain. I mean, I've been in those situations where you have a little too much fun in Vegas and you got to try to expense it to the boss. It's a hard sell sometimes. I get where the boss is coming from. And, the reason why I think Red is not broke is because he doesn't seem too concerned when Cooper is upset about this, because if he knows he's got another ace in his sleeve somewhere.
Well, and if you're a master criminal, wouldn't you be wise to say, I do have some money, but it's not a lot like it used to be. So I'm going to have somebody else pay for this stuff while I build back my wealth back up a little bit. So he's being a criminal. He's doing what he was doing back when he was starting up this thing 20 years ago. So I applaud him for it. Brilliant, brilliant plan. Get other people to pay for your stuff.
I I wish I could figure out how to do this. I would totally throw people to the wind. I would start, I would rat everybody out. Like, can I get all my bills paid and get a trip to Lake Como? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's what my mom and dad did. I'll tell you where they were. Blah, 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 blah. Take me to Como.
I left my wallet at home. All I have is Tap to Pay. Oh, they don't take Tap to Pay? Sorry.
Oh, that's funny. Well, man. So that brings us to the big three, as I like to. Well, actually, four. We didn't mention Dembe. We should run through Dembe real quick, because he does have a prominent part this week. What do you think about his torture technique? About actually cooking somebody some dinner?
I wanted the dinner. I wanted to taste what he made. It looked like he had the knife skills were great. The seasoning was spot on. He made pasta the right way. I mean, this looked like a trained gourmet chef. I'm curious to taste the food.
How do you make pasta the wrong way? You just boil it.
No, you cook it too soon. Like, if the other stuff isn't ready, you got to get the pasta out at the right time so that your vegetables and meat, like, it all has to be timed perfectly. Otherwise, if the pasta sits out, then it gets dry and crispy. And if it sits in the water too long, then it's all like nasty and tastes like paste.
Okay. But still, it's just boiling water. I mean, it's not rocket science here. Just timing and boiling water.
That's right. But he timed it perfectly. The noodles came out and boom, put it all together on the plate at the same time.
Isn't that like what normal cooking's supposed to be?
That's what normal cooking's supposed to be. Not what my cooking is.
But do you do it all wrong? I know this is off tangent, but I don't care. It's interesting to me. Is this what you do?
I don't boil pasta.
What?
I don't do pasta. My wife says I do it all wrong.
How can you mess up pasta?
Because either you leave it in the water too long or you don't leave it in the water long enough.
It's not that hard, man.
I only make pasta to throw noodles at the wall to see if they stick, because I think that's fun.
Oh my God. You boil the water, you throw a little salt in there so the noodles don't stick, and then, you know, you check them about 10 minutes in, you're good. That's it. There you go. Secret.
There's different kinds of pasta. There's al dente, and then there's linguine,
trust me,
and fettuccine, and
it's all pretty
orzo.
Much
and
all right. Let's move on, because now you're irritating me. So we do this version of torture work, because I was thinking about it. If somebody made me dinner, I would probably be more willing to talk. I actually approve of this torture method.
Well, it wasn't really a torture method. It was a empathy method.
Extraction of information method.
There you go. If you make me a meal, I'll tell you whatever you want to know.
That's what I say.
I'll give you Aaron's complete background in history.
I'll give you my background in history to make me a meal like that. It was well done. And plus, I mean, he's having a great time. Like, he even looks like he's enjoying it. There's nothing wrong with this. And, you know, cut to, you know, a few hours later where he's beating the smack out of somebody. That's a different turn of events. But I would definitely get into this version of extraction. I don't think I've ever seen that done on a show before, by the way.
That's pretty funny, actually.
Yeah, that's a pretty unique way to do it. Because we've seen these scenes 1,000 times. So
definitely need more Dembe solo scenes like that. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great. All right, moving on to Liz. Like I said, she's having an absolute blast, having a great time. First, she gets Tom back. Tom wants to talk about marriage, and all she wants is the nookie. So what do you think about the marriage thing coming back up?
I don't like the relationship. I think I've been on the record many a time saying I do not like them together. So I hope that my flashback idea was correct and that he's an imposter and he's just like playing Liz this whole time for the last three seasons.
I don't, because I would not enjoy that at all.
I wouldn't enjoy it, but at least it wouldn't be in a relationship.
Well, they are, man. And where's baby Agnes? One more time. We got to put a one. Next week, I want to see that kid on a milk carton. I swear to God, like randomly throughout a scene, they should just have Agnes on a milk carton somewhere.
Oh, that's funny.
Very, very, like very far away from the camera, almost as like an in-joke, because that would be slightly brilliant, in my opinion. All right, so she's having a great time. She's bouncing around the globe with Dad. How do you feel about their relationship and where it's at currently, her and Red?
I'm glad that say that again, because you're talking about Tom and Liz. And then
let's start with her and Tom. Let's go with her and Tom. We'll go to Red in a second.
Okay. I think their relationship is interesting. I think I'm glad that the writers actually put in there that, hey, we actually didn't get married, so we need to get married. So I love that they had that call back and closed that loop. That was fantastic. But at the same time, they're doing the afternoon delight and she lands on that toy. And then they're talking about how Agnes got so big already. It's like, what's the timeline for this season in comparison to last season? How big is the kid? That's what we need to see Agnes. Like, is she 2? Is she 4? Like, well, how old is the kid that she's like gone by that fast? Tom was only gone for like 2 months, right?
I don't know. Well, 8 weeks in episode time. I don't know if that translates to 8 weeks in real time.
Right.
I think it's probably a lot longer. You know, and I feel like here's where the show is at a, they're at a catch 22, and it's really unfair of us as fans, because we've been talking about it, us and people on the internet, talking about get Agnes out of the show. Like, we don't need to see Agnes every week, blah, 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 blah. And so they're actually doing that, and people still pick at them. So, I mean, it's like a no win. I'm glad that Agnes isn't part of the, you know, I can be fine with it. Rick does it every week on Walking Dead. It's just, I just think it's funny that we've had her very prominently for the last season and a half, and now we haven't seen her in two episodes, and I thought that was kind of funny.
I like the way they're doing it, though. Like, she's in their lives. She's part of the family.
Yes,
The toy. And was that toy she threw on the floor the same toy we saw in the vision, the flashes?
Yep.
Okay.
I think so.
It looked like the same toy. I didn't get a chance to freeze frame it close enough to see if it was actually the same toy.
I feel very uncomfortable about freeze framing child's toys. I'm just going to let you know. I'm not going to go there. I'm just not doing it.
As long as you watch it on your cable provider and not on the internet, you think you'll be okay.
I'm not doing it at all. Mm-mm.
Okay, so then her and Red. I love their dynamic. I mean, this is the same dynamic that we had in season 3A, where they were kind of just on the run, doing their fun thing. And I really enjoy the fun, I guess, that Liz Keen is finally having as part of her job. But at the same time, it's bringing up these questions, these things that she's really trying to discover about herself. We have a really great dialogue at the end of the episode about that. And at the end of the day, I think what this is really going to come down to is how much is she actually playing Red? Because if she has these tendencies, then she should be just as much a manipulative master criminal, especially as a profiler, to be able to beat Red at his own game in some regard. That would be the thing. That'd be the story I'd kind of want to see, is like her turn the tables.
I don't. It doesn't feel like that's the angle they're going for. It really feels more like they're going with the angle of which side is she going to land on, because she's obviously happy to have that attachment. She's happy to know that there is a Familia attachment. Now she knows that.
She believes that.
No, she knows that. I mean, it may not be true to some people, but you know, at face value, she knows that. And she's enjoying it. And she's riding the line. Like last week, she very much was on the line that I'm not breaking any laws. Now this week, she kind of goes with him. Now you could throw in your, well, it's across the sea and it's not really her jurisdiction, blah, 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 blah. Well, yeah. And the FBI would never cover that bill, by the way, because they're not the CIA. But besides that. So she is definitely riding that line where she doesn't know which side she wants to end up on. And I think that's what the dichotomy is going to be, is where is Liz Keen going to end up in terms of, is she good or is she bad? And that's what I felt like. I feel like his first two episodes were playing both sides of that coin.
And which the coin?
I'm pretty proud that I actually got back to that. I'm actually pretty proud of that.
And the real question is which side is good and which side is bad when you talk about the nature versus nurture concept? Because the nurturing she got from Sam wasn't exactly the best kind of nurturing. So is it the nature that makes her want to be an FBI agent, to be a profiler, the good thing?
Wait,
because
how
he was
wasn't
a, it? Because he was a grifter. Like he taught
but her. She grew up to want to be an FBI agent. I would say he did a good job.
I give you that.
How do you not give me that?
Because he did teach her the bad stuff too.
Not really. I mean, not really. I think she grew up to want to be in the FBI. I think he did a damn good job as a parent. He was a great father figure.
Or he was specifically told, make sure she joins the FBI. Because you can fund her college education. You can watch her from afar. That's the conversation Red had with her in season 2 about Harbor Master's daughter.
We're both dads. That does not happen. You're going to be what I want you to be.
It's never going to happen. It's Red telling Sam what he wants her to be through Sam.
Yeah, I don't care which way you word it. She's going to be who she wants to be. She wanted to be an FBI profile. Liz Keen did. That's the reach I'm not willing to swallow.
She also wanted to marry Tom, but realized that Tom was planted by Red all along.
Okay, you just keep talking, and you're not actually listening to the words you're saying. The fact that Sam raised her, she became an FBI agent, that means he did a good job. Red is bad. So basically, the dichotomy is FBI side, good people. Red side, bad people. So where is she going to end on? Where is she going to land? That's what I think this portion of the season is so far.
Agree on that.
You sure? Because you just spent 10 minutes saying all kinds of other stuff that I don't even understand where you're going a couple times.
I just don't know if the nature and nurture are two different things. That's what I'm saying. Her nurture has been surrounded by criminals.
There are people that just threw their podcast player in a river.
I'm just saying. It could be the same thing. It could be the same thing.
Such awkward silence. All right, let's move on. I don't even know where we're at anymore. I lost where I was because you were talking about nature, nurture, and I don't know. Apparently, he's going to force her. Red's going to...
The expression on your face is the same one that Liz had when Red ended up turning him into the inspector. Like,
yeah, what did you think about that?
My expression was the same as Liz's. Like, wait, what?
I was shocked. Shocked!
I thought the whole point was to like work with this guy. And it seems like this would be a great fit, and you're going to turn him in?
Like, shocked I was.
Can we just say how much fun Megan is to watch with her expressions this season that she has for Liz? I mean, the laughing, the smiling, the gaping mouth in this situation when he calls the inspector. She's just very expressive this season. I really love the way Megan's playing it.
I already said that, and if I keep saying it, I'm going to seem like a creepy stalker guy. But I did love how she played it, and I really enjoyed when they got to the mansion. Both of them were having an absolute blast running through there, barking orders and acting like they were someone else. And I think Liz Keene is enjoying that lifestyle, especially now that she feels like, okay, I have a connection. I get why you did all these things for me. And now we're connected.
I think she's going to go dark before. I think she'll go darker before she goes lighter.
Do you see this as, because people have complained about the character in the past, as a flip flopper in terms of where she was in her dynamics? No, I don't necessarily agree with those, but yeah, neither do I. But it was fair question. Well,
but it's the same thing that we've talked about. Like everybody complaining about we want Agnes off the show, and now she's off the show, and everybody's like, "Where's Agnes?" It's the same thing. People have complained Liz is a flip flopper. She's with Red. She's not with Red. Can't she just be with Red? Now she's with Red, and people might start to be like, "Well, I don't really like this Liz."
Okay, so moving on from Liz, let's go to Red.
The one point that we have to bring up here is that in the middle of the woods, he has a bratwurst, and he drinks wine with a bratwurst. But in this episode, he decides to have a beer. What's up with that? I thought he was a wine guy.
That's a weird thing to notice.
It's a weird thing to be singing Michael Come Roll Your Boat Ashore and eating a brat in the woods, too. But just saying, this episode, he was drinking a beer when Cooper came in.
He's enjoying all of the things that he can afford right now, which are a red Solo cup, a bratwurst, wine, and beer. That's what he can afford. He's like the rest of us now. I told you, like last week, this is the first time I feel like I'm richer than Red Reddington.
But then it's wine would be coming out of a box.
Nobody really does that, do they? They drink wine out of a box?
A lot of people do.
Is it any good?
No, but it's cheap.
Kind of like Mad Dog. I used to drink a lot of that. That ruined a lot of weekends. In fact, I don't remember most of them. All right, so what does the Grayson scheme truly bring him in your eyes? We talked about that a little bit, but do you have an answer yet?
No, because he turned over the flash drive. If anything, it would be on the flash drive.
We didn't get a whole lot.
I mean, we started the whole auction thing started with the penny.
Mm-hmm.
So, or the whole coin collection, but he only takes the penny. It's like the whole collection of Berlin photos, but he only takes the one photo of the girl. So, I mean, the penny's got to be it. I just don't know what for. Unless it's a bargaining chip or it's to complete somebody's prize collection. I'm going to make up a name like Rudolph or something in Scotland, like needs this one penny for his collection. And because I got Rudolph in Scotland, I now control this river waterway or something.
What about this? Let's move on to the cabal. Okay. Where is the cabal? Doesn't he run it now or have a controlling interest in it? I guess I'm a little confused on that because that was a huge playing point.
Yeah. That was the mid-season 3 thing. Like I'm going to take over. Right? You're going to exonerate Liz. Basically, I'm going to be your boss. And then she dies at the end of season 4. So if the head of the cabal is now dead and Red is supposedly in charge of her, why hasn't people been calling Red going, "Hey, what do we do next? What's up?"
Well, we don't know that no one has, by the way, because we don't know what he's doing in private.
Correct.
But that was an important thing I thought we should mention because what is going on with the cabal? We haven't really heard about the cabal since the whole Kaplan storyline started.
I don't even think we really heard about the Cabal then, to be quite honest. I don't think we've really heard about the Cabal since Red took over.
So it's been a while. What do you think is going on with that? He should be in charge of it, should he not? I mean, Kaplan didn't dismantle that.
Or because he's in charge of it, that's why we haven't heard about it. Because there's nothing to hear about, because they're not coming after him. It's another way to look at it. Because you don't hear about the rest of the syndicate throughout the course of 5 seasons. They're just off doing what they need to do until they start backstabbing Red. Then you hear about them. Like Mr. Vargas and company.
But you would think we would have heard something by now. I mean,
I think it would have leveraged him, especially if he's hurting for cash.
He's broke.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You would think, hey, can I borrow like $50, guys? Because, you know, I got this sweet motel, this sweet motor lodge I got to pay up. I don't know. I hope that comes back soon because we haven't heard about the Cabal in a while. And that was such an important part of the show for years.
And not to mention the war that's coming in 2017.
Which is, I don't know if anybody noticed, but what year is it?
Yeah, 2017.
Okay. There you go. Interesting. Well, let's see. I know it'll come back because I know they keep a detailed list of everything going on. I just haven't heard much about the Cabal, and I'm kind of wondering what's up with it. All right. When do you think we're going to see some operations being rebuilt?
Well, we saw a little bit of it last week.
Yeah, we saw a little bit of it last week, but I mean in terms of like larger scale.
I don't know if you'll actually see the larger scale plan. It goes back to what's the story they're trying to tell in this first set of episodes. Is it really about the bones and tracking the people down and things of that nature? Is it about rebuilding? Do we want to have, like we said last week, the lawyer episode and the accountant episode and the launderer episode? I think that's not what they're trying to do, is to have that kind of pacing. I think it's slowly being rebuilt. We just don't see all of the rebuilding that's happening. We only see the things that are the key elements in the rebuilding as it relates to how it ties to Liz.
Do you think we'll get a flash forward at some point?
Maybe.
Like 12 months later and it's all rebuilt?
Oh, I jumped a year because I was in a coma alias situation?
No comas, though. I mean, just we jump forward a year because of some tragic event, maybe Tom getting shot in the face. And we come out a year later, and he's rebuilt.
For the record, he only shoots Kaplan in the face. Everybody else is 2 to the chest. Just Diane Fowler got 3.
Okay. Answer my question.
I like when he gets all salty.
It's like talking to my kids, man. I got asked 3 times, and like, are you going to answer the actual question I asked you, or do you have to go to your room? Because that's where I'm at.
What was your
question? Go to your room. I don't remember. Oh, do you think we're going to flash forward a year?
No. I don't like flash forwards. No. It almost made me quit Alias. I'm Scout's honest truth. I almost quit Alias because of it.
For which one?
For the big jump.
Oh, I remember that's okay. Oh yeah. I gotcha. Everybody's like, oh, you didn't watch it. Well, it's coming to my head, so I'm kind of remembering now. Sorry. Okay. You know what? We've got one more thing with Red. I think this is probably, I guess, important. He says, because you're my daughter, they're having a conversation and she's talking about, you know, she kind of enjoys the life of crime, right?
Right. Whether it's the wine or the fact that I don't have jurisdiction here. And
he says, because you're my daughter.
Right.
Now, I do want to say, he doesn't say that as a question or a statement. It's delivered very much and very intentionally to be read either way. Read. So how did you take it, Mr. Mann?
I read it as a question. I read it as, because you're my daughter? Like, do you really believe you're my daughter, kind of? It seemed like it had an upwards inflection to me. But I took it as a question.
You think maybe you took it that way because you wanted to take it that way?
No, I don't think so. I didn't really think I took it he said, because you're my daughter. And I said, note, he did not say, because I'm your father. That I took in my brain. But in the statement itself, it felt like it was a question. Like it was more of a, because you really believe that you're my daughter kind of connotation to it.
Yeah, but I didn't hear anything that was refuting that point either. So it was more of just part of the conversation and stating, I saw more of a statement, but I do think it can be read as a question. So I'm not committing either way. I just heard it more of a statement, but I
was
committing
because you always tell me I don't commit to anything. So I committed.
You don't.
So I said, I'm committed. It's a question, but I will point out they didn't say because I'm your father.
That's correct.
For the record.
Did not say that. Trust me. That's exactly what I heard. It's exactly what I heard. All right, let's move on to Tom. Tom is back, and in a big way. A lot of this episode is revolving around Tom as he tries to convince Nick to help. But why wouldn't he, this is a legitimate question, why wouldn't he just call Dennison to start with? Why was he going through a hole, tracking him down? And I want to find out who this guy is, blah, 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 blah. But the information came from Kaplan. Wouldn't he automatically just accept this guy's probably on the up and up?
No, because you don't know who in the organization was still tied to Red specifically. Like, they might have helped out Kaplan because, like, Dembe was like, I'm really pissed off at you, Red, for what happened to Kaplan, but I get it. So you don't know if Albert was like, yeah, I'd be sure to help you out, Kate, no problem, but I'm still going to be loyal to Red if Red comes knocking on my door. So no, I think he did the right play. He's like, all I need is DNA, man. Just take one of these bones, go run it in your lab, and come back down in 10 minutes. Yeah. So I think Tom played it absolutely correct. It resulted in him doing the thing that he probably could have done because he didn't have any other option.
The only thing I didn't need was the, no, I'm not going to help you. No, I'm not going to help you when you know he's going to help you scene. I would have rather spent more time with Fred and Liz than have that. I felt like that was unnecessary. It could have been solved with a phone call. Hey, will you help? You know what? It's for Liz, blah, 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 blah. Okay. To me, I feel like going to the hospital, showing the bones and him going the whole no, when you know ultimately he's going to, felt like that scene was kind of a waste. I didn't really need it.
Why are you showing him the bones in the suitcase in the back of an open car that's like literally people are driving by? Wouldn't you go to like a secluded part of the parking garage?
And why wouldn't you ask the immediate question, can you at least tell me if it's a boy or a girl? Can you do anything like that? Can you give me an idea?
Right. Is this a male or female skeleton?
Something. Just
a nugget. Just a nugget.
If you're going to show bones like that, you have to have some legitimate question. You can't, for me personally, if you're going to show like a big get like that, you have to have a legitimate question to go with it. And there wasn't one. It was just, you're going to help? Nope, I'm out. All right, see you, bro. I mean, it just didn't work for me, especially when he called back later. All right, I'm in.
But to be fair, they did answer the big question. Is Nick alive or dead?
They could have done that with a phone call. That's what I'm saying is, like, after Dennison, he could have called Nick, and then Nick could have just said, all right, I'll help, because it's for Liz or something. I don't feel like you need... I felt like that was a whole scene we didn't need.
Okay.
So I would have rather had something else there. Like, a Rom doing some schematics or something would have been more interesting for me, personally. So, but now that he has this info, because he went and saw Dennison... And we get this information that we're going to mention in a second. That's the last thing. Now that he has this info, what do you think is going to happen next? What does he do with it?
Well, he's Tom. He's going to do what he has to do to figure out who this Oleander person is. I'd assume he's going to come look for a Rom and have a Rom do some spy hunting for him on the backside.
I'm curious. Oleander is a poisonous plant grown as an ornamental. That's one thing it is. And then it's also a German horse race. It's a place in Fresno. There's a few different variations of it. So I'm kind of curious where that's going to be. It's a grunge band too. If you didn't know that.
I did know that, actually.
Fun fact. Yeah. And it's a coming of age novel by White Oleander by Janet Fitch. So we're running all these by in case any of these are sparking some recesses of your human mind, telling you what this means, because I want to know what it means. What do you think it means? Do you have any idea at all?
Here was my one complaint of the episode, was that when he says, Oleander, like, you got to find him. I'm like, oh, man, come on. Like, it would have been cool if it was just Oleander. And you're like, what is it? Who is it? Is it a thing? Is it a plan? Is it a blah, blah, blah? You could add like a whole bunch of conversations, but the minute you said find him, it's like, oh, well, we know he's a person now. So it kind of takes out the fun of the profiling question a little bit. Because we already know it's a who, and we know it's a boy, a male.
And he said, yeah, he says him. I'm banking on you for that one because I actually didn't hear that. I was too busy focused on what's an oleander. Is that the thing that you drain pasta in? No, that's a colander. Not the same thing. Okay.
That was horrible.
Pasta.
That was
Dembe horrible. Ruined me. Dembe ruined everything for me. That was not horrible. It's just because you're not funny and you can't understand.
That's terrible.
You're such a dumb. All right. That's all I got. I think we'll find out about Oleander soon. Really? Colander. We were talking about pasta. It connects. See?
Coleander? Whatever.
Whatever. We're done. Let's move on to Red's rhetoric.
Yeah, we'll be back right after this.
Hi, I'm Brian.
And I'm Adam.
And we host the Star Trek Discovery Podcast, part of the Golden Spiral Media Network.
Every week, we break down each new episode of Star Trek Discovery, a brand new series in the Star Trek franchise, available on CBS All Access in the U.S., Space in Canada, and Netflix everywhere else.
We analyze what happened, what we think will happen, and how the show fits and doesn't fit into Star Trek canon, and go through listener feedback.
You can find us at StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast.com and subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or your podcast app of choice.
Join our community. Our Facebook group is at facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast.
Live long and prosper.
Hey, Dembe loyals, this is Hisham Taufik. Always remember that you are breathing for a reason. You are listening to Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
Welcome to Red's Rhetoric, that part of the show where we play two scenes from this week's episode of The Blacklist, and then you get to vote which is your favorite over at theblacklistexposed.com. Just look for the post for Grayson Blaze. Last week it was a close one, but with 52% of the vote, hashtag Red Butter did slide its way to victory. Our first clip this week comes with a history lesson about Nancy Reagan.
Oh my goodness, look at those Gowan vases and that flatware. Did you know Nancy Reagan? She could dress a table specifically for that night's guests at a moment's notice. Russian silver for a tea with Gorbachev, Italian silver stag head stirrup cups for a last minute supper with Sinatra. Can you imagine?
Sinatra? I can't imagine.
Let's find a paddle card in a catalog. I'd be lying if I said I didn't enjoy dickering over an heirloom now and then.
Our second clip comes as Red diverts Grayson's focus with some film history and some bubbly.
Welcome.
Raymond. It seems like the rumors of your demise have been exaggerated.
Fake news. Curse of our times.
So where's this painting?
I have absolutely no idea. So many rooms, so many masterpieces. Let's wander. I'm sure we'll stumble upon it eventually.
Cheers.
I'd be a completely silent partner. Harold Lloyd hanging from the clock tower, risking all, saying nothing.
That's an interesting proposal.
My goods run through your ports. If I'm caught, you disavow. If I'm not, you get 5% of the profits.
10% and you have a deal. If you show me the paint.
Yes. Of course, it looks even better if you've got a glass of champagne in your hand. Where is that young girl?
Which one was your favorite? If you like dickering over an heirloom, vote hashtag red paddle. Or if you think art looks better with a slight buzz, vote hashtag red champagne.
All right, now we move on to Special Agent Intel. First and foremost, we want to thank Jesse Jackson for his generous review and Apple Podcast. He said, wait, is that the Jesse Jackson?
Might be.
All right, should I say it like Jesse Jackson? I don't know if. Should I do it in the whole Jesse Jackson voice, or would that be offensive?
I think you've already ruined your, ran out of your list of jokes for the evening.
All right. Well, this is a review from Jesse Jackson. I don't know if I'm anyone's secret father, but I do know that this podcast makes my good podcast list. I hope I didn't ruin it for you this week. A great discussion about a wonderful show. Take your hat off, pour out a good drink, and enjoy the show. If you are enjoying the podcast, please open up the podcast app on your iOS device and leave us a review of your own. Or if you are on Android, just comment on your very own Blacklist Exposed app in the Google Play Store. We also promised that we would report back on the mystery of the Wagoneer. And it is confirmed in both episodes that Dom does indeed drive a Wagoneer.
Da, da, da.
So what does this mean, kids? It means the Wagoneer was popular in the 80s. We know that because I'm pretty sure that Clark Griswold drove one. Dad's Wagoneer is a comment about all dads.
He doesn't say my dad's, you know, Wagoneer. He says just Dad's Wagoneer. Again, the lexical ambiguity stuff plays a factor.
Okay, very
potentially.
Very true. Dom is Red's dad, making him Katarina's brother.
That would make Aaron happy because that would be hashtag uncle theory.
I've said uncle for the longest time. That's my personal theory, is that he is the uncle. and he had plastic surgery to look like Red. Didn't necessarily say it was Dom's son, though. All right, but I just said, you know,
right.
He's the uncle.
He's the uncle.
The last one, of course, is Dom is Katarina's dad making Red Katarina.
Which is my theory.
Which is his theory. I think everybody knows that on the planet Earth.
As they should.
He walks into Walmart and he's like, I think Red is Katarina. That's really what he does. That's a true story.
Hashtag mother theory and hashtag Red Arena. I saw it was going around now. I thought that was pretty funny.
Red Arena. I love all these people that are like, oh, yeah, I've been saying that for years. Really? Because I didn't hear you saying it for years. But okay. But it's definitely catching fire. It is definitely catching fire. So I want to say that is a good find by one of our listeners. I think we were onto it, but we did not jump on it nearly as quick as the listeners did.
Oh man!
So
Internet Detectives Unite.
Thanks for pointing that out. That was great. And turns out that old Dommy, he's got a Wagoneer. Still does, right?
Still does. As far as the end of that first hour of that two-parter, he pulls up and the Wagoneer is sitting right there next to the garage, between the garage and the house.
So, can't be a coincidence, can it?
I mean,
can't be a coincidence.
It could be a production budget. I mean, I'm the one that's like talking people out
really?
Of this.
Really? The Wagoneer is going to be a production budget thing?
Well, because remember, Red has a conversation in season one with the cowboy, and he says, you know, my dad drove a Cadillac. Now, he could have had a Cadillac and then traded it in for the Wagoneer, potentially. So you never know. But I'm just saying, it's one of those things. Like, do we read this much into it? Is it really that on the nose? Or is it just a thing?
I don't believe that line goes in this show without meaning something.
And here's
that's what I
would
say.
Here is why, right? Here's the key phrasing. So many people take the things that Red says in all of his little stories as like gospel truth. Remember, Red is a criminal. He's a bad guy. He says from the beginning, I'm a criminal. Criminals are notorious liars. Every story he tells is garbledygook. Nothing he says can be taken as a positive or a thing or an event that actually happened in his life. The only time you can potentially take that as truth is if you believe in the whole Red doesn't lie to Liz concept. So because Liz is the one with him in the Wagoneer when they steal it, when he says smells like dad's, you have to go, well, then maybe he is talking about his dad because Liz is the one in earshot and he doesn't lie to Liz. If you believe Red doesn't lie to Liz. If Dembe is in the car or Grayson Blaze is in the car, you know, then it's just like, oh, it smells like dad's. It's just a story. He's a liar. He's a criminal. But because Liz is in the car, it makes you think twice about it.
And if I was sitting in my car with my daughter, I would say dad's Wagoneer. If I was sitting in the car with a random stranger, I would say my dad's Wagoneer. You see the difference?
Mm-hmm.
Because your daughter would know whose dad it is, and you would have to illustrate that point to a stranger.
Correct.
I think it's just a way that people talk. So I definitely, there's definitely a familiar relationship there, in my opinion. Not necessarily saying I'm yours, but we each have our own little theory. We don't necessarily agree that it has been settled yet. Contrary to all the words being tossed around.
Correct.
And I think it won't be until they just, you know, they want this to, they keep saying they want things to just take it as it is. You want people to take it like that. You have to have Red say to Liz, I am your father. You got to have her have a Vader moment. She's got to have a Luke comes to Vader moment.
Even if he says it, people still aren't going to believe it.
No, if he said, I would absolutely believe it.
Until it's the final episode of the show. That's the only way someone's going to believe it, unless it's, if it's the final episode.
Nah, I would believe it. If Red said to her, Liz, I am your father, I would probably believe it. And just gave some kind of illustration as to why it's been such a secret for so long. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but I would buy it. Sure. At some point, you got to move on from some of the other stuff. I mean, I know we've been hung up on some of this stuff for a long time, but if they ever put it to bed and there's no dancing around it anymore, then I would buy it.
I mean, it's the crux of the show. It's the what is their relationship in episode one. So therefore, it's not going to be answered until the final episode of the season.
No, I agree with that. We've always said that. Right. I'm just saying if that were to happen, I would buy into it. I would buy it and just move on from it. I wouldn't throw out other stuff.
And we also said that you could absolutely answer the question mid-run, right? Season four,
absolutely.
Five, six, which Absolutely. Sparks a whole bunch of other stories. So maybe it is true. Maybe he is the father. And this was the big reveal. And now there's all this new stuff that's coming because we got to get back to the Cabal 2017.
We're too stubborn to believe it, right? Exactly. We're just like, no, I want it to be my theory. So stick on that. I get it. Oh, man. I think that's going to do it, right?
Yeah, because due to Aaron taking some time off and my upcoming move, we sadly will not have time for any special agent intel this week specifically, save for this one comment. Simone was actually coming off last week's episode, and she kind of had a comment that ties into this poolside chat that we were just talking about. Simone said that, "I'm intrigued by this. I will always do right stance," because she's always done the right thing, even in her most dodgiest of moves. "I don't think the question was where Liz inherited her special skills from, and it seems odd to pose the question now that the daddy issue has been settled-ish." That's her ish, not mine. "Liz picked up those skills from Sam, or her misspent youth, or Kat's DNA. Why would knowing Red as her father suddenly affect that in her brain? Why does she all of a sudden have this internal struggle now that this, oh, I have this new information, and boom, now I have this internal struggle? Wouldn't she still have that internal struggle all along?" I think is what her question is.
Honest answer. I think if you have a chance to grow close to someone and you've never known them, but you've seen them from afar and you realize now you have a relationship and they have kind of an exciting, sexy life, I think that's appealing. And, you know, there's something about the bonding aspect of it. I can totally see it. I really could. It's kind of like when you're young and you got that cool uncle and you might be a little bit of a rebel and you hang out with him. So you do a couple things to emulate him because you're just happy to be hanging out with him and you're glad that he's, you know, you guys have a bond or something. So you do things that you normally wouldn't do. You know, you might grab a couple car, you might rip, you know, steal some licorice or something out of the dime store. That's a really old reference. Not nearly that old. I'm just, you know, throwing that out
licorice
there.
Licorice or a dime store, because both of them seem old to me. But
yeah, well, I was just, I watched a lot of Andy Griffith when I was a kid. I don't know what to tell you. So you do those things, and I think because you have that relationship and you want to be closer or feel like you're as cool as the person you're with. So I could totally see that. That's my reasoning.
All right. Great to see the scar again.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
Yeah.
Good catch. Good call.
Thought twice.
Man, oof. You know, and this is the second episode, I think, of the podcast we've had to do very, very close to air date.
Yes.
So,
recording literally after seeing the show.
Yeah. So if it feels like we've kind of stumbled here and there, that is why. It's because it's been a crazy couple of weeks. We should be back in order next week. Correct. So, yeah.
So, but we will cover up on any weird, random theories, conversations. Combining these two episodes, we'll do all that at the top of the show next week, just to make sure we get everybody covered.
Yes, we will. So get some exciting feedback in the Backlist Exposed group. I think it's going to do it for this episode, though, right?
It will.
I don't really have anything else to talk about this week.
Let's blaze a trail out of here.
I do. Dad joke. So here, I do want to say, we kind of critiqued a lot of things in this episode, but I still want to say I love...
It was fun.
Yes, I love this dynamic. In the episode so far, I think they're having a good time. It's our job to look at it and try to go through what we loved, what we didn't like, what we, you know, kind of loved. So that's what we're doing. I love this dynamic. I think it's great. It's a lot of fun. It's almost like reinventing the show to some degree. And I think they're doing a great job.
I agree 1,000,000%.
That's a lot.
Because you always yell at me for doing 100%. So I picked a different number.
Can I mention as we close out? I am very proud to announce, if you listened to last week, I gave you that really long, sad story about how we won the Blacklist Award, and I got on stage, and everybody practices that speech they never expect to give, but then they get on stage and they can give it, and then I didn't thank my mom. Guess what, Troy?
In like 6 times of being nominated for your Hollywood Outsider podcast, you finally won an award, and you remembered to thank your mom?
That was really... really harsh way to say that, but yeah, Hollywood Outsider won. And to me, there's 2 major podcast awards every year. One is the Academy of Podcasters, which we won for the Blacklist, and that's by our peers. And there's the People's Choice, it's decided by the peoples. And the Hollywood Outsider, the other podcast I do, won that one. And this time I did remember to thank my mom. Boom.
Because your acceptance speech was pre-recorded, but whatevs.
Hey, you know what? It doesn't matter. I got to thank my mom. And I actually get to watch it because I couldn't. Obviously, it couldn't be there, obviously.
You get to watch it with your mom.
I got to watch it with my mom, which is even better. Even better. So just wanted to share that. And I appreciate all the people that were saying, nice things. And also, how could you forget your mom, you son of a bitch? That was one that I got, and I thought that was pretty funny. So kudos. I can't remember who sent it, but kudos to you, because I laughed pretty hard.
Well, if you want to hear more of Aaron, which I don't know why anybody would, but go listen to The Hollywood Outsider at thehollywoodoutsider.com. It's another great movie podcast if you're interested in movies and TV from time to time.
And this past week, we had all ladies on. We turned the mics over to some friends and let them go crazy with the show. Took the week off because we won. So we took the week off because that's how we do it.
And because we're really busy.
Yeah, and we're really busy. That's exactly why. That's going to conclude this episode. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TheBlacklistGSM, where we try to live tweet during the East Coast feed, starting again next week, and we use the show's hashtag, TheBlacklist.
Don't forget to follow us on Tumblr, Instagram. We're doing some new things this year with audiograms, so if you're liking those, let us know. Also, join the Facebook group. Just search for The Blacklist Exposed. Talk about the show, the podcast, or your favorite pasta recipe.
You can also subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or your favorite podcast player of choice. You can even listen from the website. But if you are really on the go, make sure you download our app for iOS and Android, powered by Spreaker. You will also find all the intel and analysis about this episode for Grace and Blaze by visiting theblacklistexposed.com. Big thanks for listening, and don't forget to answer our profiling question, how did Dembe make that pasta? No, that's not what it is. It is, who is Oleander?
Ooh.
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 Thanks, guys, for listening. Have a great week.
See you later. Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at @H_Outsider. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the Blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.